Alrighty, everyone, welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. I'm joined once again by Emil, or at Hardwood Hype, as you can find him on Twitter. He recently published episode 7 of the Messi Hattrick series, which be sure to check out on his websites. I will be linking that as well. Emil, how are we doing?
Good, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I think we were talking about beforehand. It's nice to be able to go out and about a little bit more, being safe, of course. And of course, this weekend we're getting the return of some La Liga action. We've had the Bundesliga back for a couple weeks to test out what fake crowd noise would sound like. And I guess La Liga has taken a little bit of a different spin on that from what I've read, but. Before we kind of get into things, you were telling me about, you wrote a piece for Blizzard Magazine, which is going to, so when does this come out? When does the quarterly come out that you're in?
So I think it went live on their website either last night or this morning.
Okay.
And so I think you can, I think it's actually out now, so it can be purchased on their website. I guess it's like blizzard.co.uk. I'm always tempted to call it just .com.
It's theblizzard.co.uk, actually.
Theblizzard.co.uk, yes.
So you wrote about, I guess it's like a series they do, kind of the greatest game. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in the past, just kind of as I read up, and it sort of stemmed from my interest in the fact that, you know, when I kind of first learned about Ronaldo, original Brazilian Ronaldo, and his one, you know, crazy awesome year with Barcelona. I remember reading back through it and, you know, just sort of, and then hitting YouTube and just kind of like deep diving to find as much as I could about the games. And one odd thing that I hadn't really heard much, you know, about, you know, in the United States, like it's sort of a, it's a bit of minutia, but like an absolute absurdity of a game that happened during that season. And so it's essentially the second leg of the quarterfinal against Atletico Madrid. And I mean, essentially there are 9 goals in the game. There's, you know, just crazy tension, you know, for both sides. It's, you know, young Ronaldo at his absolute best. It's Luis Figo when the Barcelona crowd still loved him. Bobby Robson and, you know, as the coach, I mean, it's an absolutely insane game. And it also sort of, what I love was it gave me an opportunity to kind of dig into that 96-97 Barcelona season as well. And that was the one where the one season Ronaldo spent, you know, with Barcelona and scored 47 goals in 49 games and was just an unholy terror. And, yes. Yeah. It was the club record for across all competitions until Messi in, I want to say, I think it was 11-12.
Yeah. When it was like 50 something, something like that.
Yeah. So the first time Messi got to 50, I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, Messi, I believe he might've tied it 1 year. And then I think he beat it the year after that.
Yeah, I'm Googling this as we talk because I'm fascinated to kind of find a list of Barcelona records and stats. Let's see. Oh, gosh, if I just do a keyword search on Messi, there's 82. I'm not going to be able to find this. never mind.
Yeah, no, but so as I recall, I can, yeah, like as we chat, I have sort of...
I feel like he's broken the record multiple times at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me see. I actually... The hat trick series that I'm writing, I perpetually have Messi's Wikipedia page up.
Right.
And so as I see it, yeah, so he actually in 09-10, he tied it. So he had 47 in 53 games. And then the following year, he went 53 and 55.
Okay, yeah, okay, Wikipedia's weirding me out here because... Okay, I see what you're talking about. Jeez. Yeah, his Wikipedia page is disgusting. It's also incredible.
It is. I know.
Wow, okay. Yeah, so...
There's entire extra pages for Messi's records. And, I mean, just even, like, niche things he's done have their own entries. Yeah, it's wild.
Well, it's probably fair, to be honest. So everyone, be sure to check that out. I will get the link to that and make sure that we put that in the post. So we're here to talk about La Liga. Barcelona's first match is Saturday against Real Mallorca. And They currently sit, I want to say, 2 points ahead on the table over Real Madrid. They're about to start this incredibly intense, every few days playing, five substitutions, nobody in the stands, crazy, unheard of, untested stretch of football. First match back, I think the first thing I want to talk about is Luis Suarez, right? I think that's the big question, is whether or not he's going to start, how much we're going to see him. I think even if he does start, and I think this probably goes for most of the more injury-prone Barcelona players, even if he does start, we're not going to probably see him for all that long, especially with the five substitutions. What are your expectations? Kind of what's the thought? Like, what have you been reading? What are your thoughts around Luis Suarez right now?
So from everything that I've read, it seems to be fairly consistent in that his recovery seems to have been, you know, pretty good. Like, I mean, he was back in training, I think, as soon as they all went back to training. So whatever that was, I guess 3 weeks ago, give or take. And, I think I think there's a decent chance that this extended layoff, Suarez and Messi, I'm convinced, are sort of potentially huge beneficiaries of it. One, I mean, Suarez was injured to begin with, but also they're both kind of, it feels weird to, they're not old, but they're not quite as young as they used to be. And like Messi's going to be 33 in 12 days. And so I think this forced kind of downtime or pseudo downtime of 3 months was probably hugely beneficial for them. And I mean, doubly so for Suarez, who was kind of already on the shelf and had all that time to recover without sort of having to miss any bars, you know, without the team having to play without him.
Yeah, and I think kind of one of the things that's interesting to me too is I think about how Barcelona are going to line up is how Suarez's return in whatever capacity, you know, we see it in these first couple games is going to impact kind of the weird Braithwaite. And I think I have to stop saying the word weird when I talk about Martin Braithwaite because I think his, when he was first introduced, I think his presence was, it was unexpected. I think kind of the level of competence he brought to the Barcelona attack, it was like I think especially when you saw him in like either the first or the second match he played in, he came on as a substitution in the second half and just changed completely the pace, the style of attack that Barcelona were going with. And I'm interested to see if Luis Suarez, one, if they play together at all. And I think they will to some extent. I don't think they're necessarily incapable of that, but do you feel like Suarez's return will help Braithwaite? Do you think the Braithwaite thing was kind of an aberration, if that's the right word, or I don't know. What do you think about Martin Braithwaite?
So, I just in a vacuum, I really just even before, because just from watching him play, you know, previously in you know, with Leganés, and he's just in a vacuum, he's a good player. You know, he just looks like he's a fast guy. He's physically, you know, pretty sturdy. He's got skill. Like, he's not sort of I guess his greatest sin is that he's just kind of good at everything and not like the off the charts sort of galactical level, you know, superstar that kind of mega clubs like to sign. But I think another huge thing about him, in addition to the fact that just sort of he has a good skill set, I think he sort of arrived at the club without without any sort of preconceived notions of where he was on the food chain, or without any kind of I think he knew that he was here to kind of effectively like provide support. Like, he was a Band-Aid signing, as bizarre thing is that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the way he came in too didn't help at all, right? Like, it was late. It did feel like a Band-Aid. And so I think it made people, I think like me too, feel like it.
Yeah. And I know that there was, and I frankly kind of agreed with it. I don't disagree with the signing of Braithwaite as much as, you know, Suarez got hurt after the window was closed, and Barca kind of did this, you know, we have an emergency. We need to, you know, we need to go trigger someone's, you know, release clause to get another striker on our team. Meanwhile, it's like, you know, you guys have a high 9-figure revenue. Like, you shouldn't be able to just go like pilfer, you know, 18th place Leganés or whatever, just because, yeah, you know, just because one of your dudes got hurt. But putting that aside, I mean, I think I like Braithwaite a lot. I mean, the little bit that we saw of him before we had to go into lockdown, I mean, I was really encouraged. And just on a personal level, he seems to kind of, like I said, he seems to fit on the team. He seems to kind of have a sort of a healthy relationship with what his role is, and, you know, kind of the function, you know, the functionality that he has on the team. And the other guys on the team seem to like him, you know, just in kind of the little, you know, just human interactions that you see here and there. He seems to have been accepted into the team. And so, I mean, I think overall it's going to be good to have him around. He can either, I think, play as a like for like substitution for Suarez. I think also he can kind of potentially fill in the Griezmann role if Suarez is up the middle, and Braithwaite could, technically, I could see him subbing in for Griezmann on the left as well, mm-hmm. with Messi on the right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's actually going to be, strangely, he's going to wind up being very valuable for the rest of the season, I think.
So one of the more interesting things to me is the midfield. And I think that's kind of been one of the more interesting talking points about Barcelona all season long, especially coming into this. I think we've heard a lot about Arthur, right? His transfer to Juventus that he didn't want, Arturo Vidal and his move to Inter Milan for the Lautaro Martinez package and all that stuff. So you have a lot in Rakitic, lest we forget about him. You have a lot of Barcelona midfielders who have been on the brink of leaving, right? And here we are, they're all there. And I think kind of the consensus, right, is that we're going to see Busquets and De Jong in the midfield. And then the third is, you know, going to be some combination of Vidal or Arthur or maybe Rakitic. What do you see from the midfield? Kind of who do you think is going to kind of shine from those three guys? Because I think what you're looking at is like Rakitic has made himself, like he's an emotional person. I think we haven't really seen how all of this stuff is going to culminate in this stranger than usual Barcelona midfield.
Right. So I don't recall if you and I spoke about this when we did the pod before, or if it was a conversation I was having with someone else. I think I realize that at this point we're probably far, far closer to the end of the Rakitic era than we are to even the middle of it.
Yeah.
But that being said, I've always had kind of a soft spot for him, and I've always kind of liked him sort of on similar grounds to what I was saying about Martin Braithwaite, in that, these guys who come in, particularly when they come in when Messi's on the team, and when Rakitic showed up, when he first arrived at the club, Xavi and Iniesta and Busquets were like this unimpeachable midfield, and you have, you know, Pique and Neymar was there and Suarez is there. And I think there's always value in guys who just like are able to show up to these superstar laden teams and kind of get along with all their teammates and kind of play a role. So I've personally never fully gotten why Rakitic was so unpopular.
I don't either. I don't know if it was a combination of like the... And he wasn't really all that outspoken negatively until, mm-hmm. I mean, he made like a couple comments here and there about, you know, being on the bench and stuff. But I don't know why he wasn't. And I guess it has to do with longevity. He wasn't at Barcelona as long as like a Xavi or an Iniesta. But like he's like right beneath those guys, I feel like.
Right. And, I mean, the thing is, Xavi and Iniesta are two of the like singularly greatest midfielders that have ever played the game.
Yeah.
And so like Rakitic is greatest sin is just not being those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, he's pretty good. And like, and, you know, just because of what came before him, he's, you know, I guess he's never been fully ingratiated, but I mean, even so, that being said, I mean, I think the, what I've always had frustration about, and there's varying sort of things as to why even Arthur doesn't consistently play as much as one would think, because I mean, I think he's another guy who's, I mean, he's not like a, the biggest of mega buck signings, but you know, they spend good money to bring him in, and he's been a good player when he's played. And, you know, you would think that, you know, he's kind of, he's an experienced, physically capable, you know, super smart player. It always kind of gets me that I feel like he's always kind of in and out of the lineup too, for reasons that, you know, whether there's rumors here and there or whatever it is, I never understand why you have this, you know, effectively star level player, and he's young, he's physically capable, and you're not letting him do his thing. Like, I understand not wanting to overload your players and run them into the ground. But for me, I mean, I think Arthur would be my choice to be the third midfielder. And I mean, I have a massive soft spot for Arturo Vidal. So, I mean, I really like him. And I think he and Rakitic as sort of very, I don't know, kind of functional subs off the bench makes sense for me. And you have Busquets as sort of like the veteran anchor of the midfield. And with Arthur and De Jong, I think that's kind of, it encapsulates, I think it does the best job of encapsulating what it is that sort of Barcelona idealistically want from their midfield.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think the substitution rule, so right, like five subs, mm-hmm. there were some mm-hmm. quotes from Kike talking about how he thinks that'll help some of the opponents, because Barcelona pull a lot of games. This is not a quote from him. They pull a lot of games mm-hmm. out of their butt, right? Late in the end yeah. of the game when other teams are tired, someone from Barcelona, and there's my garage door beneath me rocking everything like usual. They will pull something out of their butt, particularly Messi late in the game, right? How do you view this five substitutions? Do you think there's any validity to it helping other teams more than it helping Barcelona? Because I guess when I first thought about this, I just think it helps Barcelona because of how old they are.
You know, it's true. I mean, I think what I've always heard about Messi and, you know, whatever, I have no sort of particular insight to say this, but it's just something that I've kind of read and heard in interviews among people who follow the club closely as well. And they say that of course, Barcelona have always been dependent on Messi, you know, particularly for the past, whatever it is, 5-6 years to win. I mean, just for all the talent and all the money that they've spent, like, there's still an insane amount of reliance on Messi. But I've also heard that it's a little bit of a two-way street, that he doesn't like to not play. And so, I mean, there's always that. And so, I mean, I think it's helpful in the sense that, you know, for Suarez, I think you can get maybe a really good, strong kind of 45, 50 minutes from him and then swap him out. And, you know, essentially, you know, you can basically afford to relieve someone in defense, someone in midfield, and someone up front while still having subs in your back pocket. That being said, I mean, I do think that even as they've gotten older, I mean, sort of conditioning never seems to be the issue for Barca. The whatever problems that I've seen seem to lie elsewhere. So I do kind of buy the theory that the additional subs, not massively, but I would say it's probably a little bit of an advantage for opposing teams, because especially when Barca have the ball and they just have possession and they force guys, you know, the other team to constantly sort of change their shape and have to recover and things like that. being able to put fresh legs in there kind of helps combat the fatigue that Barca can inflict.
Yeah, I think the when you mentioned it's a two-way street with Messi not wanting to not play, that is a little bit... Yeah. I don't know. It reminds me of just kind of like just like the hero complex, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wonder, like, is part of the problem... And I guess like the stereotypical example of this, right, is like early in his career, Michael Jordan, like mm-hmm. super early in his career. And it's kind of funny seeing how even late in his career, Messi still sometimes, for the most part, like what he tries to do late in games is valid. It is the right thing to do, right? Like when yeah. there's not a ton of offensive production coming from your teammates, right? The best thing for yeah. someone like Lionel Messi to do might be to try to take everything on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely scenarios where it feels like there could be more involvement from everyone around him. And that's not Messi's fault per se, 100%, right? That split between the people around him, I think
yeah.
Valverde and Kike's how they strategize late in matches is in particular, I think it lends itself to Messi having the hero complex a little bit.
I agree. So, I mean, I think you bring up a really interesting point because I've thought about this as well. Now, again, I mean, I think it's really, really difficult because, I mean, virtually no one on the outside knows Messi and no one kind of knows what exactly the team dynamic is between him and everybody else and things like that. I mean, now I realize he's not outwardly sort of like the Michael Jordan, you know, Kobe Bryant, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, like just sort of scowling at teammates and, you know, yelling and screaming type. That being said, I mean, it can't be easy to just, you know, be told like, yeah, like I think it's one of those things. He will make your job easier because he will put the pass exactly at the right weight, exactly where it needs to go. But that also brings with it, I think there's a certain, and I don't know if it's exactly true of Messi, but there's probably some sort of accompanying expectation of like, look, I've spoon-fed this to you. Like the yeah. least you can do is score after I've dragged four guys over and like feathered across like right onto your foot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's that much of that, but I do think like, that a lot of the players who are superstars or at the very least stars, very talented players in their own right, arrive and very few guys seem to sort of have the assertiveness to, I don't know, almost like demand a place, you know, on par with Messi. Because I think everyone's so busy sort of being in awe of him
yeah.
that they kind of forget what, like, what they're good at. You know what I mean? Like, they over-defer, I feel like.
Yeah, and I certainly think that was, like, the Coutinho problem to some
totally.
Extent.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think there was a report that they were meeting with Coutinho's agent next week. I think his next... Who are you more interested in watching the next phase of their career, Coutinho or Dembele? Post Barcelona,
you know, oddly, I mean, I think Coutinho, because with Dembele, the flashes have been there, but the thing is, like, they've really just been flashes. I mean, there hasn't been that many sort of sustained, you know, weeks of great play and things like that. Like he's sort of, it felt like they paid for a prospect and, you know, they were expecting him to develop into a role, but between all of the injuries that he's had and sort of it was largely, I guess, like the injuries or whatever kind of difficulties he might've had settling in. I don't feel like I know what Dembele kind of is now. I mean, I know kind of what he was when he left Dortmund, but it's been a minute, you know? But in the case of Coutinho, even when Coutinho was with Barcelona, I mean, he had some really good performances. I mean, he scored some really nice goals. Like they didn't have the right position for him or the availability of the right position for him. But then he went to Bayern and he was excellent there too. So I think he's much more sort of still in the mindset of being a really good player. And I think sort of acknowledging that the Barcelona move just wasn't right, or the timing situation wasn't right, but kind of seeing it only as that. And so it doesn't feel like his sort of his confidence or sort of his whole kind of thing has been rattled that much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think especially if it's a move, which it seems like it's going to be back to the Premier League. I'm fascinated, interested to see what team he ends up on. I don't really have anything else. Do you have any lasting thoughts before we head back into? I do have one question. So what's your what's your game day ritual you're looking forward to? Is it like a certain meal, a certain drink? Like, what are you excited about?
So tonight, so this is what's going to be really strange is typically before, you know, before March, before we shut down, there's a bar around the corner, just, you know, on the other side of the block from my apartment, and kind of very ritualistically, it's myself and there's probably a handful of other people, all of them are locals, but I just started going there and sort of went there enough where, I got kind of indoctrinated into this group of locals, and we all sort of show up about 15, 20 minutes before the game. And, I typically go, depending on the time of day, but for this evening, I'll probably just, it'll probably be a red wine night, but, typically either red wine, occasionally I'll go beer, but it's typically red wine and lomo con queso on a baguette. Oh. And, it's good stuff. I'm not gonna lie. And, just kind of settle in. Now I'm very interested to see what the outside inside situation is. What would there being limitations on people being allowed inside restaurants?
Sure.
So my wife and I were speculating that maybe some places will almost like set up TVs kind of against the outside facing windows and just go hard on the outside patios or what. So we'll see. But I'm very excited. I'll be making the journey over to the local bar and gonna play by ear.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. Really excited to have them back. I mean, obviously I watched the El Gran Derby last night, the Sevilla Betis, and it was kind of less. I think I was happier to have it back than I was weirded out by the lack of fans and the this and that.
Okay, so I think you explain really something cool to me. So I didn't get a chance to watch the match, but I read online. Yeah. I guess La Liga either experimented in that game, or they're going to experiment using like FIFA sounds as like some of the backdrop for fans and stuff.
So apparently, what it is so it's not. So here's my understanding: it's not FIFA sounds sort of from the video game, but apparently when FIFA when they make the games. And I know this is, I actually recently heard that this is the case with like the 2K games as well. And they'll go to, I think particularly for bigger teams, they'll go to stadiums and record actual live club, like live crowd sounds at various stadiums. So my understanding is that I think they're going to experiment with using the actual audio that EA captured, and not sort of the audio as it appears in FIFA, to the extent that that's different. I don't fully know.
But, okay.
And they did a little bit of thing too, where they were doing overlays of kind of like on the empty seats. It was sort of like FIFA style, like crowd overlays.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah. It was. It's not quite as strange and as discerning. Like once you sort of, it's weird for the first like 5 minutes, but you do get used. It's not quite as disorienting as it sounds.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see some of the weird stuff that the different leagues try to make it feel more normal. I'm excited for the leagues that embrace that it's not normal and just do strange things because they can do strange things.
Right. I'm digging that too.
Yeah, so it's going to be good. Football's back in whatever weird extent we are it's back as a community thing. It's going to be nice to have something besides COVID-19 to talk about with people.
Right?
And it's going to be a good time. So I'm looking forward to it. Emil, thanks for coming on. Be sure to check out his work at Hardwood Hype on Twitter. We'll link the Messy Hattrick series and the Greatest Game piece from Blizzard Magazine in the post. So Emil, thanks for joining us.
Josh, thank you very much, man. Anytime.